Right. Well, the first thing I do is to thank the four organizers of this workshop. I mean, it gives me a good excuse to escape from Durham for a little bit, where when I'm there, I have little time to think about moonshine, unfortunately. That's because I've become the head of departments a year ago, and that's why. The other thing is that I have to apologize to start with, that I would very much like to give a talk as entertaining as Terry this morning, but, you know, and I have to think too much about what I have to say in English. I can't be funny. So sorry about that. So the talk is about a topic that you've heard about yesterday from Katrine, so it's very much in sync with what she has said today from a very geometric point of view. And today I would like to continue the trip a little bit by looking hands-on on a concrete setup, which is provided by Z2 or before it's off conformal field theories on K3, and see if we can recognize signatures or hints of the Mathieu moonshine in that setup. Now, all what I have to say today has already been on the archives for a while. We could have forgotten about it, but it's actually quite exciting and interesting at the light of the more recent development in the field, in particular what Katrine has been doing on the geometric side, as you heard yesterday. So we are still very convinced that our philosophy onto the hunt for an explanation of the moonshine is not dead at all, and it's gathering momentum actually from different group of people who are working and who are even in this room. So the excuse to talk about this today is that I've given some highlights of the content of the twist paper before, but I decided to go a little bit more into the details of this twist paper. And this is the outline of the talk. At first, I want to face the beast with you. Obviously, I apologize to the experts, group theorists in the room who know that already and have tamed the beast a long time ago. But I want to go and show you a little bit what the 45 irreducible representation of M24 that has been constructed by Margolin quite a while ago looks like in the light of what I need it for in this talk. Right? So I'm not going to show you the full action of M24 on that representation because I can't do anything with it at the moment in this context. But there is a very special subgroup, which is maximal in M24, as we heard yesterday, which is the semi-direct product of the translation groups at 2 to the 4, and A8, which is the group of even permutation of 8 elements. So after that, I will justify in 3, or motivate more exactly in 3 slides, why we are interested in that group, which already you've heard is an overarching symmetry group in our approach. And then I will also remind you of the reason why we are so keen in focusing on geometric symmetries of these Z2 or before conformal field theories. Then the fourth step will be to go into some nitty-gritty of counting states in that type of superconformal field theories on K3 and show you how and what kind of symmetries, or actually the geometric ones, act on these states. And then, as much as possible, try to show the relevance of this space, which is 45 dimensional, that we call V45 CFT, and how it relates to the V45 of Margolin, right? And this is basically what I want to go for. So, what kind of object did Margolin construct? Well, he constructed a 45-dimensional space that can be decomposed into a sum, a direct sum of 15, because if you label A to O, there are 15 letters there, 15 three-dimensional space, which are isomorphic each to C3, and each of these spaces is designed to carry a three-dimensional representation of the linear group GL3F2. Now, I have to talk a little bit about the context here of this representation, and GL3F2 is actually the group of linear automorphism of the space V, that I call V there, which is a three-dimensional vector space with which is constructed over F2. So it has 8 elements, 2 to the 3, hence three-dimensional there. And if we represent the elements of this vector space as points in F2, 3, we have this projective plane construction here. So these are all the elements of F2, 3, and with the origin there, just at infinity there. And the structure is that each time that you follow a line in this construction here, and that you add 0, 0, 0, then you get a hyperplane, so a set of 4 elements, which is obviously a subspace of V. And you have 7 such lines, and you also have 7 points in the triangle here. So there is a, this is called the Fano plane. There is another labeling of the elements, not using F2 to the 3, but using integers from 0 to 6, which is going to be very useful in the next transparency there. So in particular, if you translate...
Sorry. So the vertices are lines and the planes are...
So the,
sorry, the vertices are the lines in F2 cubed, right?
Points. Yes. So these are the points here.
Those are the points.
And then if I collect the points that appear on each line here.
Yes, good.
Okay, this is called a line in the projective plane, yeah? Right?
Okay.
So now, looking at the points, if I want to translate, look at the effect of translations on these points there, you see that you can view this as a permutation of these labels on the right-hand side. And you have 0, 1 up to 8, so you have 8 labels. So actually, the shape of the permutation in A8, they're actually permutation in S8, but they are even, and they all have the shape 2 to the 4, so 4 cycles of, so 4 transpositions, essentially.
Right? So is the 8 point infinity, or what's the 8 point?
Yes, you use this, yes, 8 is the infinity there.
And I can't read too well. What's the label of the point in the middle of the circle?
This one?
No, on the Fano plane.
Zero.
That's zero. So that's just the correspondence is quite handy, right? So for example, if you shift by 100, okay, so this point here, which is 1, is going to be shift to 0, 0, 0, 0. Yes? Right. 100. So it goes to 0, 0, 0, where is it now? Is this one? So it's infinity. So 1 and infinity are transposed. Okay, so you have this structure of 2 to the 4 cycles. Right. So what did Margolin do with this information? When he looks, first of all, I told you 1 infinity before in the previous transparency. Actually, this permutation here corresponds to the translation by 100 in the other transparencies. But if you translate by all the other ones, then you populate the first row of this array, right? And there is a little label here which is appended to these permutation, and I'll explain what they are in a minute. So the way he populates this array is that, first of all, he knows that there are 105 such permutation with 2 to the 4 shape in A8, right? Here you have 7, right? And he also knows, because it's all part of his construction, that the first row here is invariant by conjugation by the group Z2 to the cube times GL3F2. And therefore, and this group that is invariant by conjugation has size 8 times 168, it happens, in A8 produce a subgroup of index 15. So you have 15 different sets of seven permutations here that you organize according to this classification.
So each permutation appears once, precisely once in this list?
Yes. Yes. And then you act, you move from one line to the next by using an A8 permutation and use it by conjugation. So you conjugate the first line by an A8 permutation and then you can.
Okay, so all your permutations here are in A8? All the permutations on the slide are in A sub 8.
Yes, they're all
the 14 cycles, right? So they're all in A8.
Yeah.
There are
four?
There are four transpositions.
Yes. They are not written as transpositions. There's a little dot, but it's there. Is that what you're asking? I don't understand why this goes away. So this means cycles, yes? It's just to make it less crowded on the track. So now we have them there, and we have this label, right? And you see this label is 0 up to 6 again. So they're actually corresponding to points of the Fano plane from the previous transparency, but it's still there. And it's organized. I should say something else. I should say that first, if you take one row of permutation and you add the identity, you have an abelian group of order 8. And now you can label these representations in the first row, say, in such a way that if you take the labels that correspond to any line in your Fano plane, so for example, if I take 1, 6, and 2, which is this line there, and I have 1, 6, and 2, and I add the identity, I also have a group. And this group is the Klein group, Z2 times Z2, right? And you can do this in seven different ways, because you have seven lines, and each time you produce such a group. So there's a lot of structure there, which is linked to the Fano structure, right? So we now think of each of these rows in the array. We want to see how A8 acts on it, and I told you before that you act with conjugation by conjugation on these rows, and this permutes actually the labels. Now, if you associate a formal basis PAPO to each of these rows, so basically that space that we construct here would also have its basis permuted by this permutation of A8. And in a nutshell, the space of Margolin can be written as a base space B with a fiber nu here. And I have to explain to you a little bit more about the structure of this fiber there. So in order to do that, Margolin...
So what was B before you knew the fiber?
Well, B is just a vector space, which is 15-dimensional. Mm-hmm. Okay.
So the fiber is three-dimensional.
And the fiber is three-dimensional. The fiber...
So what was B? Did you define B?
I just wrote it here.
B is generated by...
Yes. So I attach some base vectors. I create a 15-dimensional space,
okay,
which is labeled like this.
Okay.
Right? Then, indeed, so these are the collection of three-dimensional space. And there is also a Fano structure on this three-dimensional space. So there was one here that I tried to explain. And now I want to just touch upon the Fano structure on this one. So the way Margolin does this is that he looks for a three-dimensional irreducible representation of GL3F2, right? And he constructs it from a lattice that, okay, it's quite interesting to me and it was new to me, which is the lattice lambda 3B7. So it's a rank 3 lattice. The fact that B7, which is defined here, which is being this... this number that B7 appears in the 45-dimensional representation of M24 is reminiscent, of course, to when you look at the character tables and you see, as Jeff was talking about that the other day, yes, we had B7 and then you had B15 for a different representation. So I'm sure that a lot is...
Is that 7 also the 7 of the fact that L3 of 2 is isomorphic to L2 of 7? Yeah.
Okay, so, very good. So this lattice is actually can be seen as being generated by 21 pairs of root vectors, right, which are actually partitioned here into this little array here. So, and of course, you also have plus and minus that comes in. So that there are 21 pairs, but I just wrote one element of each pair. Yes. And so you see you have 2, 0, 0, 0, 2, 0, and so on and so forth. And I have to explain why you organize them like that as well. But I thought I wanted to say something about the fact that the automorphism group of this lattice is Z2, a semi-direct product with GL3F2. And this GL3F2 can be seen as being, let's say, generated by reflections with respect to all these root vectors, right? And then what you do is that you associate an action of GL3F2 on C3, so a complex three-dimensional plane, by taking, say, a first frame here, an autonomous frame of C3 here, which is made of three of these roots of the lattice there. And then you organize all the other pairs, so all the other autonomous frames like this that you have, there's six more here, in such a way that if you look at, say, an automorphism that would fix a pair of them, okay, and then all the automorphisms that fix a pair also fix a third one. Well, that's the way.
Also fixes what?
A third frame.
And when you say automorphism, is there some Hermitian structure on C3? What automorphism of what structure?
I'm talking about an automorphism of GL 3-2, an element of an automorphism of the lattice.
This is Z adjoining B7 module generated by these vectors.
Okay, so this is a quadratic form over the ring of integers and some quadratic imaginary field or something like that.
There is an
emission field, Okay. And then each time that you have identified these three that are fixed by a certain class of automorphisms, you label them with three labels of the Fano plane that belong to a line. Okay, so that's the magic behind these numbers there. And then we have point frames, but we also have line frames, you saw. And then this is a little bit easier once you have established this, is that this frame, which is called a line frame here, is obtained by taking the first root vector of the point frame label 0 there, right? 2, 0, 0, you write it vertically here. This second one comes from the second root vector that I write here comes from label 2 here, and I take, in principle, the second root vector, which is 0, b7, b7, write it like this, and so on and so forth. Right. Now, why do I go through all this detail is that I want to talk about a very specific feature of this representation, is that it has a twist in it. Now, what do I mean by twist? Well, if you act with a permutation, an even permutation of 8 elements that I call tau here, on any row of the array from the previous transparency, say X, right, then you usually go to Y that could be X itself, but you know, it could also be another one. Okay? So it doesn't really matter for my argument. But then this is on the base, on the B space, yes? Now, this conjugation here by A8 also has an effect on the three-dimensional space, which is called the fiber there. Now, if you look at the entirety of your array, and if the effect on the fiber is not the same for all the fibers, then you say that you have the effect of a twist in your action. So the twist is when the induced maps between funnel plates associated with permuted rows are not all identical at tau fixed. Right? So the statement there is that if I fix the label of the array like I did there, now I'm not saying that there is only one way to fix the labels, and far from it, we can do several things there, but for any fixed label of the array which is compatible with the funnel structure that you want, okay, the group A8 acts with a twist on V45.
But can you say more precisely how it acts? I mean, in the base, and you pick the specific
Bases,
so can you say which vector gets mapped to which
vector?
Yes,
this
is there a natural way of understanding it, or is it complicated?
Well, I mean, there is a calculation that I don't have a general principle that can, you know, it's just a constructive way. I mean, you put your label and you can do that.
But it would be nice to see, you know, 8 things being permuted in an even way.
Sorry?
It would be nice to see 8 things being permuted in an even way.
I think that's part of the point. This is A8 not being A8. It's a different version of A8. Just like M24 acting 45, I mean, it's not M24 that we're used to. There's no 24 things in this very definition space. It's kind of a different, completely.
But I mean, does it permute the basis vectors according to some action on this funnel plane? I mean, is there some sort of quasi-geometrical ways in which I can understand it? I mean, you've written down these basis vectors associated with these different points, so you think there's some natural way in which you can say how A8 acts on the basis vectors while at the same time moving the basis.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's still very much, I mean, it works, but the real structure for me is a bit difficult to pin down. I don't know. I mean, okay, so another way to say that there is a twist is to say that the action of A8 doesn't factorize between the basis and the fiber. Right. Now, there is an action of Z2 to the 4 on this representation as well. And although I'm not going into the detail of it here, just say that you take the first array that we had, and then now we conjugate every element in the array by an odd permutation of 8 elements. So something which is into this set there. And you create now a new array, and then I don't have the time to go through the detail again, but there is a quite natural action of Z2 to the 4 on this array here. And the important point for us today is that this action is faithful. So Z2 to the 4 acts trivially on the fiber, and it's producing a faithful representation on this array here, on the basis. Okay, so we will come back to these features of the Margolin representation later. So, but before this, I want to motivate a little bit once more. After Catherine's talk yesterday, it should be quite easy to do so, why we are interested in this group Z2 to the 4 times A8. And as she kind of hinted at yesterday, is that this group emerges when we surf the moduli space of CFT theories on K3 as a maximal subgroup of M24, and also when we restrict ourselves to a particular class of K3 surfaces, which are Kummer surfaces, right, where we have quite a lot of control on the geometric symmetries there. So the structure of a geometric symmetry of a group of a Kummer surface, by construction itself of the Kummer surface as a Z2 orbifold of a torus here, is that it has a piece which is translational, which is the 2 to the 4, because there is a 4 lattice that we use to produce the torus. And then there is a non-translational piece here, which can be deduced very quickly from a classification of Fujiki here. So this is G prime T would be the group at the level of the torus here, okay? And this is a subgroup of SU2. And then after the orbifolding, as Catherine explained yesterday, GT is a subgroup, a finite subgroup of SO3. And the maximal such groups are listed here as G0, G1, and G2, where the non-translational piece here is either Z2 cross Z2, in which case it's associated to the square lattice, and then you have the tetrahedral lattice, and you have the triangular lattice. Okay, so. Now, I also want to highlight here a feature that I will refer to later as well. When we do the orbifolding procedure to construct the Kummer surfaces, and of course after that resolving the singularities, which are all of A1 type there, we can see that there are fixed points associated to this orbifolding procedure, and they are encoded into these objects that are called F of A, where A is a vector in F2, 4. And the generators of the lattice are labeled as lambda I here. So we have 4 generators. So these points here, four component vectors here, are associated with the fixed points in the construction. And if we shift by half lattice vectors, then we induce a permutation of these fixed points. So the labels A in F2, 4 get permuted when we use Z2 to the 4. All right. Right. So this is one of my favorite pictures to summarize in one transparency the idea behind the surfing, right? It's all done via lattices for deep reasons that I don't have time to go into here. And the important point is that from the fact that we have a K3 surface, we know that associated to the structure, we have a lattice of integral homology, which is H star XZ, which is this cyan-colored cartoon there, which is a lattice of indefinite signature, 420. And within it, when we focus on Kummer surfaces, a very important object is the Kummer lattice, which is 16-dimensional with negative signature. And it's generated, this lattice, by the cycles that I alluded to on the previous transparencies, EA there, A being labeled by the points of F2,4, right? And it's a little bit more complicated than just taking the span of these 16 EA cycles. You have to do a so-called gluing procedure, because this Kummer lattice has to have very specific embedding properties into H star XZ. It's called a primitive lattice, otherwise our construction can't go forward.
So
right?
You have to take a half of the sum.
Yes, it's essentially.
Yeah, so the exceptional divisors from blowing up.
Yes, they are. And okay, so this is Nikulin's procedure for gluing and producing a. Yeah.
I'm just trying to remember. Is it you have even sum? You have
sums
of the EAs, and then you add the spinner weight like that?
No, the way it works is that you take half the sum over points in the hyperplanes.
Yes, exactly. You label the fixed points by F2 to the 4, and then you know what the hyperplane is, and then you take half sums of 8, where the 8 sit in the hyperplane.
Okay, thanks.
Why do I have this problem that nobody else has?
Maybe your display, your preferences might be set to sleep the display very quickly.
Ah. Yeah. Is it worth trying to? What's this?
Yeah,
No. Why do you want to do this? It's not, I don't think it's a question of.
It's like the power going through so quickly.
But it could be the sleep, the.
Yeah.
It's putting the display of the sleep in the shortest.
Yeah, because there's plenty of juice in that.
And yeah, but it's set up in a way that it doesn't have power, it goes to sleep quickly.
Ah.
Normally.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, you can, or you can do what you
Okay, thank you. Okay, we'll see. We'll see if it's really annoying. Maybe I speak too long for one transparency. That's what it is. Right. So we have the scumulatus here. And what we did with Katrin in the first paper that we wrote together is that we managed to construct a larger lattice of a higher rank than pi here, which has these features here, is that if we see this as the part of the integer homology lattice, which is fixed by the action of a geometric group here. We take the autonomous component in H star XZ, and then we add to it a one-dimensional, or a Riemann lattice, which is generated by this combination of two null directions, not in H2XZ, but in H0 and H4, which is then we get this extra direction. And then all this actually was already constructed in Kondo's paper, right? What we noticed is that we can find a very interesting lattice, and I'll tell you why it's interesting, by adding yet another direction here, where E is actually now half the sum of all the EA exceptional devices there. Right. Now, this element sits in pi, and it's actually the only element in pi which is invariant under gx. So obviously, I have to add it because here I've excluded everything that was invariant. And the reason I like to do this is that there's a deep theorem by Nikulin, is that if we know the action on pi of g, then it's enough to determine everything. So once you know the action of the group on pi, then you know the action everywhere. So it's interesting to have the full pi there. But we get a little bit more by this procedure. And the reason why the MGX lattice is interesting is that we can construct not just a bijection between the left-hand side and the right-hand side. Now, what is the right-hand side? Is the Niemeyer lattice for the root lattice A124, which is, by the way, the only one we can use in our construction, because it's the only one that would allow for this lattice that I call pi tilde here, which is related to the Kummer lattice by an isometry.
Yeah. Use Leech lattice.
Sorry?
You don't like the Leech lattice?
No, we wanted to, historically we looked at the Niemeyer lattice as this one because we had very much the M24 action in mind, and this gives us a device to track at the group theoretical level what the action of M24 is, and by means of this bijection and isometry, be able to say something on this side.
But it would also work for the Leech or
not? No.
Yes, so.
Yeah.
Then at least doesn't work?
We haven't.
16A1.
Yeah. So for the purpose of this type of approach with the Kummer surfaces, you can't have another one. Right? Doesn't mean that the Leech lattice is not an interesting lattice to think about, of course. Yeah. Yeah. Right. So. So obviously we could never have an action of M24 here, because this lattice here is 0.24, and this one is a mixed signature, right? So there is a geometric obstruction here. So we're not hoping anything like this. Just one step at a time, really, right? So what you can do, though, is that you can look at different Kummer surfaces, with different groups, symmetries. And if you do so, construct in each case a bijection theta gx. And you see that if you take, for example, these two, right, we are able to construct a bijection which actually is the same one for the two. And because of this fact, we had this idea that at the level of the Niemeyer lattice and what we read there, okay, we could combine the two symmetry groups. Now, by combining the two symmetry groups, we are not saying that any theory that we know about has this combined symmetry, of course, but we wanted to transcend a little bit whatever a theory would be to try to get a feel of how that the elliptic genus is kind of it's an invariant on the modular space, so it kind of collects information and symmetry from different points in the moduli space. So somehow, it's obviously the idea of the VOA is also again the same idea. So trying to find a way to collect these symmetries, and this is one way to do it. Right. So this is another little cartoon that just summarizes what I said just a minute ago. So these are the three maximal geometric symmetry group of Kummer surfaces there, right? This represents the H star XZ lattice here. And this is actually the lattice MGX in the three cases, right? So this white blob here represents a generic Kummer surface where the symmetry group is a little bit smaller than any of these, but emphasizing the fact that you always have the translational part for all Kummer surfaces by construction, right? So this is the generic situation there. And in all cases, you can, by using what Katrin called the Niemeyer marking yesterday, which is basically fixing a particular standard 420 lattice that you associate with H star XZ, then we are able to collect all these symmetries in the Niemeyer lattice. So just to give you a glimpse of this paper, which is obviously much more detailed about that. Right, yes.
Is there any other example we know where this happens, like the sum moduli space? So I know example. We all know examples where exactly the opposite happens, right? Like in string theory, there are points in the moduli space where there are enhanced.
Yes.
But then these modes become massive when you move away from the.
Yeah.
Do we know examples where? Other example.
What do you want? Example for what?
Just saying so usually if you say there's something invariant or moduli space, then and there's an enhanced symmetry at one point, I would say then it's not seen. It's special to that point, like in string theory.
Right.
But they want the opposite thing. They're saying somehow everywhere in moduli space you see the symmetries of everywhere else.
Do you know about the universal symmetry group of Givon and Corelli?
No.
Okay. So they tried to do something very similar. So the idea was that you had enhanced symmetry groups with Moraine moduli spaces at different sub-loci of Moraine moduli spaces. And they tried to collect all that into a single large group.
I see. So
and Jeff and I also tried to do something similar with this algebra group of GSPs. I think those are the previous attempts.
He was asking for successful attempts.
okay.
I mean, doesn't the electric genus of any Calabi out of that? Because it's independent.
No, he wants an actual symmetry. He wants
a real action.
Well, K32. This is K31.
Okay. Right. Now, can I go on? Yeah. Now, a side remark for the moment is that if you look at this maximal geometric symmetry group of Kummer surfaces, and if you look at the action on the V45 of Margolin, you see that actually they act without a twist. So there is a way so that whatever twist you have between nu x and nu y is the same for any fiber, right? So we have a constructive proof of this again in our paper. So z2 to the 4 to the times a8, as I remarked before, has a twist. But the geometric groups, the maximal ones, and anything under, we conjecture, act without a twist as well. Right. So why do we focus on geometric symmetries? And of course, some people will say that it's a philosophical, let's say, take. Okay, and it is in a way, but it's substantiated by several requirements. Is that the first thing is that we like to fix the preferred n equals 2, 2 subalgebra and the n equals 4, 4, which means that we have to choose a U1, left and right. And this is another way to say that we choose a complex structure for our setup here. We also require, and this is something that was advocated in the Matthias et al. Paper in 2012, yes, that we want to fix the n equals 4 superalgebra pointwise. We want to fix this four plane. And the reason being that we want to preserve supersymmetry. Right? So when we look at the elliptic genus and its decomposition in n equals 4 characters, the action of M24 is completely decoupled from the action of n equals 4 there. So when we want to keep things as they are. Now, for reasons that are linked to understanding how to get to the Cayley-Durham complex, and again, Katrin talked about that yesterday, although she says now that she can arrive at her results without this hypothesis, but being able to take a large volume limit is certainly a way to deal with this Cayley-Durham complex. And again, if you want this, you need to have a geometric interpretation of the theory that you are looking at. So this is really, yeah.
But when you say geometric symmetries, you believe you're going to get all of M24 that way?
Yes.
But won't these symmetries you write down never mix the twisted with the untwisted sector?
True, but remember that we are looking at Kummer surfaces.
But if you look at the decomposition at slightly higher levels, I think you will need to mix twisted and untwisted sectors for
true.
All of M24.
True, well, I mean, I don't have, I know that fact. I don't know how exactly how the M24 representation 231 is structured. So I've not looked into this in detail. But it could be, the honest answer is that I don't know. What I think is that if we manage to go outside of Kummer and find another, you almost need only one more generator sometimes.
That is true.
But there are symmetries of Kummer surfaces where twisted and untwisted stuff is mixed, geometric symmetries, we just don't keep the same Keller class. At the moment, we kept the Keller class that was induced from the underlying torus, but if you don't insist on that, I think you only insist on fixing the holomorphic structure and you choose a different Keller form, you can write down symmetries. That's mixed what we call the twisted stuff here with the non-twisted stuff. Kondo has papers about that. It's just, I mean, the fact that we don't see that here and the symmetries that we've written down has to do with the fact that we're fixing a particular Keller class, namely the one that comes from upstairs, the degenerate one.
So how would that evade?
Well, I mean, I think she says that geometric symmetries that are not geometric at the level of the torus, but only geometric at the level of the orbital, whatever that means.
But I thought you just classified things that acted on the conformal field theory preserving n equals 4 without really having to specify.
Oh, yeah, but I mean, we had non-geometric symmetries.
Yes.
But you didn't have M24.
Yeah. Well, but we had pieces that would, I mean, if you were to be able to put them together, you could conceivably build M24.
They weren't all in M24.
They weren't all in M24.
Yes, so I want to say again, I was going to say it in the conclusion, but I mean, really, we believe, and of course we're still hoping, that we are going to be able to do to look away from the Kummer surface and produce another geometric symmetry.
What Catherine is saying is something different. He hopes
yes.
That within the Kummer surfaces, there are geometric symmetries
yes.
That then come from geometric symmetries of the torus.
Yes, okay.
And there'll be enough to generate
no.
M24.
Well, I don't.
At least that's the answer to your question where you say that
right.
how can we get away without mixing twisted and non-twisted sectors if we decide we want to remain in the geometric context. And then I'm saying maybe we can use those symmetries, and maybe it's easier to look at different geometric interpretations. We don't know that.
But it's unlikely that you'll go up to 124.
I mean, something that breaks the unequal
portion. We have a maximum, we have a maximum factor already, but only one more generator.
Well, that's
yeah, like, I don't, just don't see how you can get the representation which is larger than 20 dimensional.
Oh, no, no, I mean.
Okay, maybe it's.
We can't collect on the numeral lattice. We can't, I mean, this no, not with the numeral lattice. No,
Yeah.
The case three, we can't do it.
Yeah.
We have to take the second symmetric power of PD or something like that.
So to recap here, if we stick to Cooper surfaces in this setup of surfing, you cannot go above Z2 to the 4 times A8 by construction. So you need to look at slightly different things.
I'm a bit confused by that. If what if you just took the same surface and tried to embed it in the Niemeyer lattice?
Why what, sorry?
What if you just took the same Cooper surface and tried to embed it in different ways in the Niemeyer lattice such that you did, like...
What you mean, another Niemeyer lattice?
No, the A1 to the 24.
Okay.
And you just embedded the same Cooper surface in different
ways. In different ways. Mm-hmm.
It's not clear you could do that, is it? After conjugation?
Don't know. We didn't try.
But that's, I mean, you can generate a lot of groups this way.
You can't.
I don't know if it is. If you start to take any embeddings in any lattices, even in very small groups of symmetries, and you put them together, you can generate the Conway. You can generate whatever you want, in a sense. So, in the sense that it depends on if you put the symmetric groups together, the way the symmetric groups are made together, you multiply different groups together, depends a lot on how you embed the lattice inside.
Right.
If you start, you have to give some rigid rule on how you embed the lattice. Otherwise, you embed the Cooper in the lattice, because otherwise you can embed in whatever lattice and probably obtain any.
No, I mean like the Nicolin rule of embedding. Nicolin gave a way to embed in the Niemeyer lattice, and A1 to the 24. But even say that there was a unique way. I mean, I don't know many details, but
yeah.
And then the point is to use the action of M24 on the lattice to induce an action of the embedded.
So they can actually, once you fix one embedding, what I understood from them is that you can actually just go through the moduli space, go through the path in the moduli space and sort of glue it in a reasonable way.
Yeah, I was just wondering if you could glue two different embeddings at the same.
But there's nothing to justify this. And you might wonder why you're doing this. And is there any kind of, I mean, here, for instance, if you follow the path back, then you get a very clear interpretation that you were wondering. Right? And that's something we can say something about.
You
come back for the same, don't you?
If you surf.
Yes,
you come back, but you have to be careful because you come back and there's this twist is going to kick in. And therefore, you have. So the twist is going to. Because we are on the cover of the moduli space because of all these extra assumptions about the symmetries, yes? Then the twist is a bit like measuring a monodromy when you.
So you will have non-trivial monodromies? Are you sure?
Well, there's a twist, and we think that this is what's going to produce the effect.
Maybe we should.
Yes, go on. Okay. Well, this is a bit more boring for two or three transparencies, so I can go quickly. It's basically looking the states which contribute to the first order in first order of the massive contribution to the elliptic genus, which are labeled by these quantum numbers there. We chose them to be like this in the charge of the holomorphic sector here for definiteness, okay, and anything on the right. And we use, in order to identify these states, we use free field representation. And this is a summary of my ingredients here. So we have four U1 currents. We have two Dirac fermions here, they're conjugates. And a realization of the n equals 4 in terms of these is catched here, but I don't need it too much as such for the talk. But of course, to do any precise calculation, you need that. So the Ramon-Ramon ground states in these Z2O befalls are either untwisted or twisted. And the untwisted sectors, here they are, 8 of them. And 16 are the twisted ones. And at the moment, this is just a label, okay, A, which are conveniently labels out of elements of F2-4 for a reason that becomes immediately clear here, is that if I am in a geometric interpretation of the superconformal theory, then this A actually corresponds to the fixed point of the Z2O befold and at which the twist field is located, right? So immediately we see a little bit of the geometrical ideas coming in there. This is the partition function for the Z2O befold in question. We basically look for these states here. I want to see this 45 times 2 come in. And here is the result of this calculation. So in the untwisted sector, it's of minimal interest to us for what follows, but here they are. You have 8 massless fermions constructed like this, and then we have 2 bunch of 4 bosons here that we can disentangle into a massless and a massive contribution. But what is more interesting to understand properly is actually what happens in the twisted sector, where you have 96 massive twisted states, they are fermionic, and they can be organized in a space here, which is an action, well, I've written it like this, so the set of objects here, WTA, where T are the twist fields, and W is either a set of 3 or a set of 3 bar. I haven't told you yet what 3 and 3 bar means at this stage, because I haven't introduced any geometric action of symmetries here. That's the next transparency. But I'm organizing things in this way, and this is the content of the set of 3 and the set of 3 bars in terms of free fields. Now, because we are looking at the elliptic genus, we have a sum with signs, where the boson come with a sign and the fermions with another sign. So in the massive sector here, we see that these 3 plus 3 massive bosons are going to be eaten by some, for 6 out of these 96 states there, right? Now, of course, there is a prescription to choose, to know which 6 states are going to be eaten. They are not arbitrary, right? So before I can comment on this, which 6 states are actually being eaten by the bosonic part, let me summarize here the action of the symmetry group. So if I take Gx, remember that it's a semi-direct product of Z^4 times Gt, with Gt a subgroup of SO3, right? Then the action of this group on the twisted fields here, the twisted ground states, as I said before, they act as a permutation on F2-4. So the Z2 to the 4 piece acts as a translation on A here, but that produces a permutation of the TAs. And the non-translational part, GT here, actually produces a permutation again of these states. It also acts linearly as a subgroup of SO3 on the sets of 3 and 3 bar of the previous transparencies. All right, so that's the way it works. And then I can write now this space for the representation here. It's as a tensor product of the space 3 plus 3 bar and the 16 of the affine group of F2 to the 4. Okay. So as I said, we want to take away 6 of the 96 away. And the way we construct this is unique for our purpose, is that we look in the space here, in the base space, we look at a particular direction here, which is built from the sum of a 16 elements here, TB, right, which is obviously invariant under the action not only of Z2 to the 4, because I sum over all of them, but also on the action of the non-translational part, so the whole group here, and then everything which is perpendicular to that particular direction. And because, if you remember, the action of the affine group is faithful. No, sorry, not the affine one, sorry, the Z2 to the 4, so the translational part of this action is actually faithful on the base, and it's invariant on the fiber that was already in Margolin, then this ensures that actually I pick out the 6 states that will cancel the bosonic contribution uniquely.
But yeah? Doesn't the choice of what you're calling N naught correspond? I mean, you could think of perturbing this conformal field theory by a marginal operator that took you away from the orbital fold limit. And I think the choice of N naught means if you imagine perturbing by a particular marginal operator, which is a linear combination of marginal operators associated with each fixed point, then these 6 states would pair up and become non-GPS. But you could perturb the theory by other combinations of marginal operators, and then you would get a different set of 6 that would pair up. So it doesn't seem very canonical, except with this. It's canonical given the choice of N naught, but the choice of N naught is not very canonical.
I think the choice of geometry is what singles out.
No. I mean, you have 16 twisted sectors, and you can interpret any linear combination of these exactly marginal operators.
Right.
And there's one, I mean, this is sort of suggests you do it sort of symmetrically in all 16 sectors, but you could just pick one of them. So then you have to adjust.
As Greg says, there's a corresponding set of choices that you could make of how you perturb the theory.
Okay.
Yeah, the moment we have these glasses where we only look at the Kumha surface. Yeah, this is the unique state of
life. No. Even for Kumha surfaces, there are many different tangent vectors off of the Kumha locus.
You can blow up at each fixed point.
No,
in the free field theory, orbifold, you should be able to see all families. There should be families parametrized by Grassmannian of 90 dimensional spaces on which M24.
No, but she's fixing some more structure here, I think.
Well, it's the choice
because
of that not. Her choice
that's
of that
the choice
not
of perturbation
is
of the
media.
That is Kate. She's looking at torus orbifolds. They are looking this Z2 to the 4 shifting symmetry.
Mm-hmm.
That is, for example, I think the only one that is fixed. That,
exactly.
Yes.
That is fixed by the Z2 to the 4.
So you want the perturbed theory also.
Even if you perturb, if you want to keep, for example, the Z2 to the 4 symmetry, translational of the things, I think that's the only modulus, the only marginal.
I think if you perturb by another operator, then that maximal subgroup will be embedded differently. Maybe not so,
I mean,
maybe the Z2 to the 4 will not be so evident, but it better be there. There's going to be a Mathieu action. You should have a whole family of Mathieu subspaces at level 1 of dimension 90.
I mean, that's a choice. The choice is that to focus on the Kumha surface.
If you think that M24 actually acts on some subspace of the conformal field theory, then it had better be that there's a whole family. Not for every way of perturbing off of that locus, you should find a 90-dimensional subspace with an M24 action.
Okay.
It might be that there isn't any such. And it's certainly, you know, going to be harder to find if you don't have this crutch. I mean,
I'm being a bad chairman because I'm allowing, even causing the speaker to run over. So please wrap up. So
yes, I will. I am able to wrap up. Yes, so this is essentially my last transparency because my conclusion I've given them before. So this transparency was an attempt at summarizing the conclusion of this investigation with the CFT and the states. So we found a space, V45, CFT, this time here, which basically we view as a space that collects the actions of the geometric symmetric group, which are associated with these Z2 orbifolds. And the combined action that we get is the affine transformation F2 to the 4. As Catherine said yesterday, GL4 of F2, which is part of this affine group, is actually isomorphic to 8, right? And the representation of the affine group on the base of this space V45 CFT is actually equivalent, that we can show, to the Margolin's representation of Z2 to the 4 times A8 on the basis of its space. So as far as the action on the basis is concerned, we have a complete equivalence, right? We also know that Z2 to the 4 times A8 acts with a twist on V45. What we see in this construction is that if we look at all the actions of the maximal geometric symmetry groups, we see that they act without a twist. We don't just see it, we show, we prove it, right? So if you look at every single theory that you can imagine in that class, okay, we see that the group, the geometric symmetry groups, acts without a twist, right? So we see that the action of these maximal geometric symmetry groups, okay, on that state there, so this action, which is induced by the symmetries of the states in the conformal field theory, is equivalent to the action of the groups GK S subgroup of Z2 to the 4 times A8 when we look at the Margolin representation. Right. Okay, and this is the comment that I made before, is that the twist in this representation of Margolin is basically a manifestation of a monodromy in when you surf on the moduli space. Well, that's at least our take on that. Right. Conclusion of conclusions, and then you can clap.
Okay.
Okay, so this is basically saying again what I just tried to say it for the last hour. So thank you.
Questions?
I'm slightly confused. I can believe that the monogamy is there. That's very natural from the embedding of the Mikumi. The Mikumi is embedding into the A1-24 surface without that embedding, can we see the, can we directly see the monogamy just from safety point of view?
No. Because we don't observe a twist if you look at the states.
Right.
Okay.
But each given CFT, there is no twist.
No.
Just that when you put them together, you somehow have to relay the states so that effectively there is some sort of twist. But why this has something to do with the monogamy, I don't get, to be honest. But maybe that's just...
Well, I mean, it's not something that I've worked out. So, I mean, it's kind of... Well, maybe Catherine has a better feel for this geometrically, but...
I mean, just geometrically, if I just, you know, look at my rational curves and trace them around the moduli space, going back to say, without the embedding, I mean, can I see the... No, man, you really need the lattice.
We don't have a geometric... Well, I don't have a geometric understanding of the twist in the in the context of the conformal field theory.
It's only the embedding.
Yeah.
Okay, why don't we... Thank Anne again.
Yeah.